You know, this is a topic that is very sad. Police officers have higher rates of depression than the general population, with some reports saying that it's prevalent to somewhere between 10.5% to 14.5%. That's an amazing statistic. In 2022, the Chicago Police Department had 7 officers who committed suicide. Then another statistic said that 26% of all police officers met the criteria for mental health conditions, including depression, anxiety, burnout, or PTSD. Is this part of the job of being a first responder, or is it something that is, you know, is changing in the way the job is to make it more difficult? And with us to discuss this issue is Kevin Donaldson. He's the co-author, along with Detective Christopher Anderson, of the book Man, You Are Crazy. It's a great book. It offers a perspective on this issue, talking about bringing out to the open and bringing meaningful conversations about how we deal with this this very, very sad topic. Kevin, thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited about this.
You know, I want to talk about this issue of mental health in particular with law enforcement, but I think a lot of what you're going to talk about today is going to have application to other careers and other jobs, because we all have stressful jobs. I think you've got to say that first responders are right up there at the top of the list. But, Is it something that has been increasing over the years that you've seen, or is this something that's always been there and now we have a name for it?
It's definitely something that's always been there. If you go back in, just take a veteran, for instance, World War I, they started identifying it as shell shock. Then it was battle fatigue in World War II, and post-traumatic stress came on somewhere around the Vietnam era. So it's always been there in one form or fashion. The problem is the stigma has gotten so toxic when it gets attached at with police officers. You know, your statistics of 10.5% to 14.5%, in my opinion, and from what I've seen, is so skewed because people don't want to talk about it. Their jobs protect, they rely on the fact that they need to be able to carry a gun and carry on their job. It's how they support their family. It's how they make their living. So it's They're remaining silent about it. They're not getting help for it, and it's a growing epidemic. New Jersey just had a retired Bayonne officer lose. He took his life last night. My partner, Mike Feliz, took his life on May 9th. And that's my partner. That's the person who's closest in the world to me. He's my best friend.
Oh, so it's
growing. It's not stopping. And, you know, unfortunately, unless people are willing to open up and talk about it and make it okay, it's going to continue.
So, you know, just to get, not to, you know, really delve into it too much, but is it because the police officer, let's say, doesn't want to say, I'm having trouble, I'm struggling, because then he may be taken off his job and not be able to support his family? Or is it just the masculinity that is involved in these police departments, where if you say, you know, I'm having trouble today after I was just shot at last night, and, you know, people rib the police officer and say, get back on the street like I did? Like, what's going on? Are both of those, or neither?
I wish it was as easy as saying that it's some form of toxic masculinity, but it's not. Not more than, I think, 3 or 4 weeks ago, there was a Jersey City female lieutenant took her life. So it goes on both sides. It's more prevalent with men because men seem to have the fortitude to carry it through, which is not a good thing. It's, you know, we like to be the best in everything, but that is something we
right.
shouldn't be the best at. But unfortunately, that's the way that it goes. But inside the police department, mental health is used as a tool by certain administrators. There are certain administrators who are very good at making sure their team is mentally sound. But there are other administrators that see it as a weakness, that you're seen as a liability. You get put on what's called the rubber gun squad. And I can't believe how many people don't know what the rubber gun squad is. Rubber gun squad is if they see you as a liability, they're going to take your weapon away. And the reason they call it the rubber gun is you're given a red rubber gun in the academy as like a placeholder for your gun, sort of train you to carry it around. And it's emasculating from a man's perspective. It's very, very emasculating. And you're talked about behind your back by other officers, like, hey, I wonder what happened to him. He got his weapon taken away. And over the course of time, if your weapon stays away long enough, well, guess what? They have every right to get rid of you. And now, in New Jersey anyway, police jobs are very competitive. The salaries are quite high. How are you going to support your family? These jobs don't grow on trees.
So what are the factors that create this mental health crisis? I mean, you know, some of them are just easy to identify, but can you kind of bullet point these for us, you know, and tell us how this is different than any other profession?
So you also got to look at the profile of a cop. A profile of a cop, and this is a vast majority, but it's not all of them, but a profile of a cop is somebody who usually comes from a household that wasn't very supportive. They were born in chaos. They can't live without chaos. They create chaos, and that's all they know is chaos. And then they get involved in some sort of contact sport, and this makes really good police officers. It just makes them very good or very bad spouses. So when they get on the police department, they're these alpha males. They're these people who that want to be the go-to guy, somebody that everybody looks to for strength, because that's what you are as a police officer. Nobody calls a police department to say, hey, my son graduated high school or my daughter's getting married. They call you at their worst possible moment, so you got to eat everything. And then you're seeing, and it's the cumulative stuff. You're seeing things that people aren't supposed to see. You're seeing things that people are rubbernecking as they're driving. You know, they're looking to see what kind of bad accident it is. You're coming up on somebody who just may have blown their head off because of a suicide or a bad car accident where somebody severed in two. And I've seen all those dead babies and all the horrors that you can imagine. And when you're done with that call, guess what? You don't have any decompression. You got to go on to the next call, especially in a busier department. So you don't have any time to decompress. Police officers, we decompress in very unhealthy ways. A lot of us will drink our problems away or isolate ourselves. And rather than, you know, women, that's where women get in law enforcement, get it really, they have a tendency to speak to each other more than men. Nobody wants to be seen as the weak man. I'm here to tell you that is not the way to do things.
Well, and when on the other side of the break, I want to talk a little bit about some concrete ideas about how to deal with these types of things. Kevin Donaldson is the author, co-author of the book, Man, You Are Crazy. It's doing very well on Amazon. You can get it there. And he's also the host of the Suffering Podcast, which is in the top 1% globally of all podcasts. And we're going to talk about that when we return on the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back. We're here with Kevin Donaldson, who is the author of a book, Man, You Are Crazy. And, you know, Kevin, did you hesitate before titling your book Crazy, or is crazy a word that we should be using and be proud of it?
Well, too many officers out there think that if they do believe that there's something going on mentally, and they believe that they are crazy. But if they let anybody know that they're having these odd thoughts. So I listen. The crazy word is to try to destigmatize it. Crazy is not forever, and that's the problem that most officers think of, and that's why they're hesitant to get help, because if they get labeled as crazy or a liability, they think it's forever. Unfortunately, it's just a temporary condition that can be overcome. And too many departments, they make it a permanent label that's put on them.
Kevin, you spent 2 decades in law enforcement. Can you tell us briefly about your own experience and what happened to you and kind of how you morphed into what you did with your Suffering Podcast and writing this book and being really a spokesperson for bringing this issue to light?
My police career is just like it's a normal police career, seeing lots of different horrible things on a daily basis, but also making a difference in people's lives. And that was what police work was to me. It's showing up when nobody, they have no idea where else to go, and you're the person standing in front of them who has to have some answers, if not the answer. And it gives you an enormous sense of purpose. My life got turned on its ear on July 10th, it's coming up on Wednesday, July 10th, 2013, when I responded to a domestic call and a gentleman named Anthony Vocaturo was about to kill his ex-girlfriend. A gun battle ensued and rounds got volleyed past my head. And I thought, he went upstairs, we got the victim out, we saved life, we did exactly what we were supposed to do. He was a barricaded suspect. What had happened to me is after he volleyed the round, I wasn't sure if I was shot. I came down on a bunch of glass that shredded my arms up. As I'm at the hospital, I come home, and seems like everything's good. It's a good job. Well, the after effects, the next day, I started having some tremendous nightmares. I couldn't sleep. I was having startle responses. Every loud bang would scare the hell out of me. And the next thing you know, I'm in full-blown panic mode, isolating myself from my wife because I don't want to wake her up. As time moves on, I begin to drink and drink heavily. I always drank quite a bit, but I was drinking heavily at this point, and it led to several suicide attempts. Just a spoiler alert: I didn't do it. You know, I survived them, but I did. I've had a gun in my mouth. I've had a rope around my neck. I've ingested so many pills that I just don't understand why I'm here. Until the moment that I had some clarity. You know, it's that voice of God that hits you. And you can call it whatever you want. It doesn't have to be a religious connotation. But once that voice of God hits you and say, hey, you need to start cleaning your life up. And the way that I did that was I was involved in group therapy with other officers who were involved in shootings. And once you get that taste of reaching another officer who's in distress in much the same way you were, that's where the real healing begins, because your knowledge and what you went through can actually relieve other people's pain and suffering. You know, long story longer is I finally retire from the police department June 1st of 2014. And I stay with group therapy, and I become that elder person inside the group that people can run to. The same thing I did as a police officer, just in a different capacity. I could no longer be a police officer. I had to retire on what they call an accidental disability. So, you know, years go on. I'm in therapy. I'm reaching these other officers. When there's an officer involved shooting, I made sure I always reached out to them to make sure that they were mentally okay. I didn't care about the shooting. I didn't care if it was a good shoot, bad shoot. That's not my concern. My concern was the mental health and well-being of that officer. Unfortunately, in 2020, the world closed down, and groups, so did all therapy sessions, and I don't do very well on Zoom. So I wanted to reach out to a bigger audience. So that's when I started the Suffering Podcast, which is all about overcoming adversity, because I saw my suffering, and now I look at my suffering as something a little bit different. All right, if you can turn it on its ear, and because there's no pressure, there's no diamonds without pressure. So that suffering is what's going to bring you to the next level. And that's the basis of that show. That show is, instead of looking at it as a deficit, it's actually going to become your strength one day. It's going to stink. It's going to be hard, and it's not going to be rosy all the time. But when you get through to the other side, man, I'll tell you, it is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place.
And, you know, the word resiliency comes to mind. And, you know, you don't want to have to be shot at to be resilient. But, you know, I guess there's two ways to look at that. You succumb to that suffering, or you become resilient and become stronger for it. And you're obviously the latter. So I commend you for that.
That gentleman, Anthony Vocatura, who volleyed that round, I used to hate him. I used to hate his guts. But then something turned on his ear, because it got me thinking, what did this guy have to go through? He wasn't shooting at Kevin Donaldson. He was shooting at the police. And what did he have to get to? What kind of emotional pain did he have to get to in order to do that, knowing that we have guns and we shoot back? So think about the pain that he got there. Now, the second part of that is he shot at me. He put me through all this badness. But he also put me right where I'm supposed to be. By being an advocate for other officers, by talking about overcoming adversity, by talking about resilience. So I used to be mad at him. I'm thankful that he put me in the spot where I'm supposed to be.
And that's a really good way to look at problems in your life, no matter what the issue is, right? And, you know, I see as lawyers, and this is no parallel really that's fair, but, you know, I see people go through problems. And, you know, you're always going to go through problems in life, whether it's a bankruptcy, a personal injury, a divorce, you know, what you name it. You're going to go through something bad in your life. And it's not, you know, if it's going to happen, it's when it's going to happen. And then how are you going to deal with it? Are you going to be bitter? Are you going to fall down? Are you going to let the world, you know, cover you up? Or are you going to try to learn from it, try to pick yourself up, and use that as, you know, some sort of tool to move forward. And again, easier said than done. I think we all know that. But that's what I'm hearing from you, Kevin. I think that's just a beautiful statement.
I think they need to add it to death and taxes.
Right.
Suffering.
Yeah.
Yes.
Suffering. It's going to happen. Let's talk briefly about your book, Man, You Are Crazy. And the idea is, you know, what can you give us just a few bullet points of what police officers, first responders, maybe anyone should do when they're feeling these feelings of despair and suicidal thoughts, post-traumatic stress? What are the things that people should be doing?
Well, there's two main audiences that Chris and I wrote this book about. Number one is for police officers to understand that they are not alone. But the second part of that was for people who love a police officer, somebody that's in the police officer's orbit, because they're going to see them acting a certain way, and they're going to want to know why. This book will answer some of those questions. Oh, that's why they're acting this way. For me, my greatest healing process was reaching out to another person and getting that joy, that same joy that I got as a police officer. That was number one. But also, there's so many different methods. There's exercising, there's living a healthy lifestyle, because too many people try to numb and anesthetize the pain through drugs, alcohol, and it doesn't make the pain go away. You know, I use the analogy prairie fire. All right, so years ago, I read a book on how to survive worst-case scenarios, and one of them was a prairie fire. I live in New Jersey. There's no prairies. But the way to survive a prairie fire is counterintuitive to the human instincts, which is to run away from danger. If you run away from a prairie fire, it's going to grow and grow and grow until it gets so big it ultimately consumes you. It's like not paying your credit card bill this month. It's going to get bigger next month. But if you run straight into that fire, it's going to hurt, and you're going to be scarred, and you're going to be charred, but ultimately you're going to be alive. It's the same way with suffering. If you anesthetize it, run away from it, it's going to grow and grow and grow. You got to face it head on. As much as it stinks, and I guarantee, I give very few guarantees in my life, but I guarantee if you face your pain and suffering head on, the duration of it is going to be so much smaller.
Kevin, we have no time left, but I want you to come back. I like this topic a lot, and it has a lot of application for other people. But please do come back. Kevin Donaldson, he is the author of a book that you can get on Amazon or any place that you can buy books. Man, You Are Crazy, co-authored with Christopher Anderson, and the Suffering Podcast. Can you tell our listeners quickly where they can pick up the podcast?
So what you can do is go on sufferingpodcast.com. It'll have all the links, or you can go to realkevindonaldson.com, and everything will be on there. The links to the book, the link to the podcast, everything will be on there. And the link to the Karen Conti show will be on there as well.
All right. Sure. Kevin, thank you so much for joining me. Have a good rest of your summer, and I know you'll be back on our show.
Oh, great. Can't wait.
All right. Take care.